When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Summer is supposed to be an opportunity to slow down, but when you look at your kids, you can't help but notice that your kids are growing up fast. Help them build independence as they grow with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where parents can keep an eye on kids' money habits while kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. It's the easy, convenient way to raise financially smart kids. Get your first month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/pod.
Welcome to Eye on the Illini. This is Illini guy Mike Kegley, and it has been a very, very interesting day for the Illini. We have a couple of events going on that really kind of make this a different day and a new outlook for Illini Nation. First off, we want to give a real shout out to the Illini women with a victory over the Badgers, 79-63. Adalia McKenzie, career high 26 points. Illini women, I believe, are 12-2. Just unbelievable start. Shauna Green has been a resuscitation for the women's program. So congratulations out to her. The next thing we'll be talking about is, and we're going to start off with Luke Altmaier's commitment to come to the Fighting Illini football program. And then I will have Matt Stevens on to talk about that. And after Matt is done, we will have Brad Sturdy and Kedrick Prince talking about the Illini victory over Bethune-Cookman, which is something that it's not a big deal, but they needed to have happen, especially when you see Michigan losing to Central Michigan at home. These type of games, you have to win. But I'm Mike Kegley, one of the Illini guys. So we're going to jump on here with Matt Stevens. Matt, this is a big day for the Illini football program. Tell us in your mind why you think this Luke Altmaier commitment is a big deal.
Because it gives Illinois an opportunity to have a quarterback for multiple years and not have to go into the transfer portal dance that they've been doing the last 3 years, going all the way back to Brandon Peters, then to Tommy DeVito, and to now to Luke Altmaier. There is a opportunity here with Luke Altmaier having 3 years of eligibility and having some experience at a Power 5 conference school like Ole Miss to potentially give you a chance to just get out of the cycle that you've been in, which is going to the portal each and every year that you need a quarterback, because you need a quarterback. And so what this does in the short term is it allows you to have somebody that you think can make you a competitive football team in 2023. And in the long term, it allows you to have the opportunity to have stability and some chemistry and some, semblance of just rhythm with your offense, with your quarterback for multiple years as Brett Bielema continues to build this Illinois program into what he wants to be, a consistent winner. Well, that starts with the quarterback position. And everybody saw this year what Tommy DeVito was able to do in a one-year scenario. But you give Barry Lunney multiple years of being able to work with somebody like Luke Altmaier and giving him the opportunity to compete for this starting job, then I think that's just the benefit that Illinois has found in the transfer portal for not only the short term of 2023, but also the long term of 2024 and maybe even 2025 as Luke, has 3 years of eligibility left in Champaign if he chooses to use them.
Okay. So let's talk about this, Matt. You obviously have been working on this story for the last couple of weeks, monitoring the different quarterbacks, et cetera, that we have out here that have been interested. What makes Luke Altmyer, you know, he was a four-star recruit in high school, probably the highest ranked Illini quarterback since maybe Nathan Shielhouse. What traits does he have as a quarterback that makes him such a desired commitment?
Well, I think the first thing is I think Luke is very, very mature beyond his age. And that goes back to his parents and the way that they brought him up, you know, in his development in Octavia County, Mississippi. His father is an orthopedic surgeon, the orthopedic surgeon for Mississippi State Athletics. And Luke's a multi-sport athlete all the way up to probably, I think, his junior year of high school, played baseball, played basketball. And you see that on the football field, it translates. He is an athlete that is a thrower. I mean, this is not a run first guy. And by the makeup of his build, I don't think Barry Lunny and Brett Bielema want him to be a run first guy. And so I think so. The first thing I would say is that just his maturity level and his ability to understand football conceptually as a teenager is at a very, very high level. And I think it was at a very, very high level when he was at Starkville High. I talked to, you know, his high school coach, Chris Jones, over there. Chris has been there for about 5 or 6 years now. Coach Luke Altmyer all the way up from 10th grade. Luke's been kind of, you know, at least in that area, in that county area of Mississippi, he's kind of been known about as a prospect. I talked to some Mississippi State people today before the press conference, the ReliaQuest Bowl press conference, and there was people that told me they remember watching Luke Altmyer in a high school spring game as a ninth grader, you know, and you were like, wow, that's what a college quarterback ought to look like. And the reason you felt that way was because, one, he was able to read defenses as a teenager, and two, he has the ability from an accuracy standpoint to know where the ball should go and it usually doesn't go in dangerous areas. And when you're dealing with Barry Lunny, and especially when you're dealing with Brett Bielema, that is the first thing they ask a quarterback to do at that position. Please don't put the ball in a high risk scenario or high risk area of the football field. Luke Altmyer traditionally is not going to do that. And I think that's the first thing that I think is going to allow him to have a head start in winning this job in 2023. And I do think that the coaches are going to do the Tommy DeVito, Art Sitkowski thing. They're going to let Donovan Leary try to win this job away from Luke Altmyer, just like Matt Corral won the job away from Luke Altmyer, and just like Jackson Dart won the job away from Luke Altmyer at Ole Miss. But I think what Luke Altmyer, you know, is able to provide instantly when he arrives in January and will be available for the spring, is he's going to show this coaching staff that once he gets the offensive concepts down of what Barry Lunny's offense is and what Brett Bielema wants to do on that side of the football, the ability to not create turnovers and not create high anxiety plays at the quarterback position is going to be really, really valued out of him. He is not a major arm talent in the sense that he is not a natural Josh Allen. You know, this is not a 100-mile-an-hour guy that's gonna, you know, throw it from one side of the field and try to throw it to the other half hash, you know, opposite hash. That's not what he does. What you see out of him is when Luke has been able to get into games at Ole Miss over the last 2 years, is his ability to kind of stay within the offense. And I'm not talking about game manager, but there are throws that you need to be able to make in a Lane Kiffin type offense, a timing and rhythm type offense. Luke can make those, but he makes them look almost elementary because he allows the receiver to almost run himself open, and then Luke will find a way to get him the football. And so there's a way for Luke Altmyer to have a lot of success in this offense if he has weapons around him to be able to put together, you know, some multiple years at Illinois that I think could be pretty, pretty good. I think there's a comfort level in understanding that there's a level of maturity and there's a level of experience and there's a level of football savvy and understanding of the sport and of the position of Luke Altmyer that I just don't think that you're typically going to find in a 19, 20, or 21-year-old, especially coming out of the transfer portal.
So one question for you is Coach Lunny got a lot of flack from some quarters about the performance in the red zone of the Illini offense. And, the point is I didn't hear a lot of people give him credit for how well he and Tommy DeVito integrated into the team.
Right.
You've covered a lot of teams over the years. How hard is that for an offensive coordinator to do effectively?
It is extremely hard when you evaluate the idea that I thought Barry Lunny described it perfectly. It was an arranged marriage, no less, right? Usually when you get this type of a scenario, like you're getting with Luke Altmaier, you know, coming up in the spring and in 2023, this is a marriage that both people want. This is the marriage that Altmaier wants. This is the marriage that Lunny wants. Barry didn't pick Tommy DeVito. He was already committed to Illinois before Barry was hired and before Barry was announced as the offensive coordinator and before they made that change. It's not to say Barry wouldn't have taken Tommy DeVito and tried to make, you know, and felt like there was good clay there to have a really, really good year. But it wasn't like Tommy picked Barry or Barry picked Tommy. Like, it was just kind of, they were put together and told, hey, make it work. And they did. But from a football and a, like, Mike, I'll say this, and I've said this before about the portal, and I think people roll their eyes every time I say this, but the reason that that football games and specifically college football games in September look ragged and almost unorganized, it's because offenses are being put together, basically by the roll of the dice, thanks to the transfer portal, and everybody's supposed to be on the same page by the time you roll it out there in September. And you're starting to see that first month of college football looks pretty untethered because the guys just don't have any kind of rhythm or chemistry or you know, ability to kind of get to point A to point B a lot of the time because they haven't worked together. They haven't played together before. Right. There's no preseason in college football. Right. So I think that's something that Luke Altmaier is going to have to use the spring to get together, to do well. I think that's what Tommy did really well, is be able to use the spring to get himself situated with the Illinois offense under Barry Lunny and get himself at least understanding what the concepts are and what I'm going to be asked to do. And then by the time you hit the preseason camp, then you're able to kind of stretch out the offense and see what you can call and what you can do with Luke Altmaier and what kind of weapons you can put around him. But I think that from a chemistry standpoint, this is why I go back to the big picture, is that when Luke Altmaier is your quarterback, maybe in 2024, you should have more chemistry and you should be able to open the playbook up even more and things. So you talked about the red zone. I honestly believe that some of that honestly was they just couldn't run the football from the 8-yard line in a lot of the time because the offensive line just simply didn't get the push they needed to get that they were getting earlier in the year. If you looked at the red zone numbers early on in the year, they weren't particularly bad except for the game in Indiana, right? which was bad, but every other game it seemed like,
right,
they did quite well because Chase Brown was running it in the end zone or they were getting play action stuff. Later on in the year, when teams were able to game plan for Illinois just didn't get the same kind of offensive push, especially in the red zone, and it became a problem. I don't know how much Luke Altmaier helps with that, but I do know that Luke Altmaier has been in a sophisticated Lane Kiffin type offense. And so I don't think he's going to be overwhelmed by anything that Barry Lunny or Brad or George McDonald, who also has a big piece in this from a game planning standpoint of what the offense looks like. He's not going to be, overwhelmed or anything like that of what they're going to be asking him to do.
No, and a Lane Kiffin offense, if you can handle that, you're probably okay with coming up to what we're going to be running at Illinois.
You talk about the note card that Mike Leach used to have of like the six plays he liked to run and he would rep it 100 times, right? Well, Lane Kiffin's got the Waffle House menu out. I mean, and that's the thing that Jackson Dart and Luke Altmaier had to get down almost in their head was that Waffle House menu of plays that Lane Kiffin loves to call all the time. And that's not going to be what Barry Lunny likes to do at Illinois. There is a convoluted, hey, this is what we want to call, and this is what I want to do with you. And so I actually think it'll be a more condensed version of what Luke Altmaier's more naturally known to known at been known to do at Ole Miss. But I actually think that they can branch off that a lot once they get situated with Luke and figure out what his skill set is best to do. And then that's what Barry Lunney and Brett Bielema get paid to do. And that's what I think that this spring is going to be about as we transition into a fall camp of 2023.
Yeah, and one thing that is really nice is we've got that same challenge with teams looking disjointed with college basketball. Now that the transfer portal has got right into full gear for them, you know, you could just look at tonight where we saw Michigan fall at home, to Central Michigan, and Iowa get cooked on the road at Nebraska. So it's out the window, folks. You better play good every night or you're going to get beat. And, you know, I don't know that it'll get that far in college football because you have an 85-person roster, but it definitely has added some craziness into the system. So, you know, looking at, is there a way that you can make any type of comparison, arm strength to Tommy DeVito? You know, I've heard that his arm, while first off, very few people are Josh Allen, you know.
Right.
And so I've heard that he compares favorably on arm strength with Tommy DeVito and on accuracy. So
on accuracy, I would say yes. I think Tommy was always still developing that accuracy piece, even when he got to Illinois. And boy, I think he took another level with that once he got to Champaign. There's no doubt about that. I'm sorry, but from an arm strength standpoint, Tommy was more suited. Tommy just had, I feel like, has a better right arm. In terms of just, you know, essentially spinning the football, like Tommy's just more athletically gifted in that regard, in my opinion. I think that when you talk about trying to throw in cold weather and you try in high wind situations, like you've been to Memorial Stadium in Champaign, yes, like in the fall, that's not an easy task to throw the ball when the wind is what it is there in East Central Illinois. Right. And so, does Luke have a noodle arm? Absolutely not. No, it's a very, very capable power five quarterback arm, but I think Tommy had a superior arm. And I think that's what's going to get him looked at here in the next few months when he starts trying to get an invitation to the NFL combine and starts doing some private workouts with some people. I think that's what's going to make potentially Tommy a late round pick in the NFL draft. I think that would be the case. Luke Altmaier did not get, you know, recruited by Illinois or signed by Illinois or picked at it by Illinois out of the portal because of his arm strength. What he got picked out of Illinois was his ability to be able to do everything that they asked him to do on the field from an electrical standpoint, and then his competitiveness. And you saw that last year when he was asked to in fire drill type situation, go into the Sugar Bowl, having never started a college football game in his entire career as a 19-year-old true freshman, and play one of the best defenses in the country that year in Baylor and what Dave Aranda was putting together in that Sugar Bowl, and make it a football game. Because at that point, when Matt Corral is getting hauled off the field and you know that he's never coming back again, you pretty much had you could rule out Ole Miss from ever winning that football game. And suddenly in the first, like right before halftime, it's 7-7 Ole Miss because Luke Altmaier is making plays. And I think that game needs a lot of context because Luke Altmaier is kind of drawing it up in the dirt as we're going along here. And he is not prepared for this moment, and he is not, he's not going to be asked to do the same things at Illinois from a just draw it up in the dirt and let's see what happens. And we don't care whether you throw a pick or not. There was an all or nothing type of deal with that. And I think sometimes that's where Luke succeeds. I think he would be much more comfortable in a controlled environment. But in that game, you saw his competitive fire. You saw his competitive spirit. And I was told by, again, some people I talked to from Mississippi State who know Luke and obviously, you know, his dad, there's a cowboy kind of deal with Luke Altmaier that if you get into a jam with him, he might be able to make a play. And not only that, he might be able to make a play in the course of the offense, but you've seen him in the two years that he's been able to have spotted play at Ole Miss in Lane Kiffin's offense. He's been able to make some plays with his feet too. And that's I was
going to ask you, how is he, you know, running the ball? Obviously, we're not expecting Illinois to adopt pure RPO, but
yeah, I don't think so. Here's the thing. I think the RPO stuff that they did with Tommy is going to be very, very similar. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is I don't think Luke Altmyer is going to be seen by any defense in a scouting report as a running threat. But I think that if the play breaks down, Luke Altmyer can make a play with his legs. And I think we started to see and say those exact same things about Tommy in the middle of the year when he started to get comfortable with the offense and everybody was covered up and it was just kind of him and he became the 11th guy on offense. He was able to make some plays with his feet and get some first downs with his feet. And I think Luke Altmyer can do the same thing. The concern I have there is that he is 6'1" and 200 pounds, and he needs to get down because there are times in which Luke Altmyer plays like he's bigger than he actually is. And the result of that is, guess what? Your quarterback gets hurt. We saw that with Tommy DeVito with the whole ankle thing, and we didn't know whether he was going to play against Minnesota. I think Brett Bielema will be very, very concerned about that. I also think that you also have 3 years where Luke Altmyer can get with Tank Wright and that strength staff at Illinois and maybe put something on his frame and maybe get to 215 pounds and get to 6'1.5", 215, so that he's more apt to take the punishment of a 12-game regular season as a starter, which he's never had to do at Ole Miss. So there are elements here where you can prepare for the short term with Luke Altmyer and the long term with his body. But I do think he can make athletically, he's a good athlete. Like I said before, he's a baseball player. He's a basketball player out of high school. And it translates to the football field. He can make plays with his legs, but I think that this offense is going to ask him to make much more plays with his right arm and his mind. And I do think here's the other thing that I think Brett Bielema and Barry Lunny are getting excited about having a potential multi-year starter, is there were times this year by the end of the year that these offensive coaches allowed Tommy DeVito not to call his own game, but to get out of stuff that he knew wasn't going to work because he knew the playbook like the back of his hand by that point. You're going to have an opportunity with Luke Altmyer that he's going to be a major factor in how these games are scripted and how these games are game planned throughout the week. As he gets more mature and more experience within this Illinois coaching staff, they're going to allow him to have more responsibility. And judging by everything I've heard about Luke, and again, in his background and where he comes from and his maturity when it comes to the game, trying to analyze the game himself as a teenager, he's going to be not only is he going to be allowed, but I think he's going to flourish in that type of environment in being able to almost prepare for the game himself as he gets more mature and more established as the quarterback at Illinois.
Yeah, and I do think also with his, you know, understanding of the game, he's probably going to be a guy who will. I thought for the most part, DeVito avoided taking hits when he ran.
Sure.
You know, and to me, there's nothing more frustrating than watching a quarterback who goes out and takes a hit or two that he doesn't have to. And, you know, it's inevitable with the size and strength of these athletes nowadays. You do that 2-3 times and that may be all it takes to be sitting on the sideline watching the game, you know, with a concussion or what have you.
Yeah, it's the frustration that like Nick Saban always had with Tua Tagovailoa, like, and now we're seeing it in the NFL, right, with Tua. Yeah. Is that, you know, it's the frustration that NFL guys, honestly, I mean, he's going to get taken one or two, but it's the frustration that NFL guys have about the current Alabama quarterback, right? And so like, he's kind of a slight frame. Tommy had, you know, a bigger frame to him at I think 6'2" and 215, 220 pounds. Yep. Luke's going to have to get a little bit bigger. I really do. To get through a 13-game season, right, with that, again, he's never had to experience before. But these are all things that I think he's willing to do if given the opportunity to compete for a starting job. And I think in talking with everybody that's been around Luke's camp over these last couple of weeks, like you said, I've followed the story. God knows I have. that Luke is interested. I think he's going to be interested in being and having 2 feet in and being totally committed to what this Illinois staff wants him to do, because they're going to give him a legitimate shot to win the job. And I don't know if he ever felt like he had that at Ole Miss. I talked to his high school coach again, like I said, Chris Jones at Starkville High. The one advice he told Luke was go to a place that wants to celebrate you. Don't go to a place that will tolerate you. And at Ole Miss, they kind of tolerated him because they had Matt Corral and they had Jackson Dart. And Luke Altmyer might have been the best backup quarterback in the Southeastern Conference, quite frankly. And at Illinois, I think he's going to be having an opportunity to be celebrated just like Tommy DeVito was this past season.
Which is great. And I know that across the Big Ten, we're seeing the addition of quarterbacks, particularly in the Big Ten West, that, you know, with obviously Hudson Card, you know, going to recently to Purdue, we're seeing it's like an arms race with no intended pun.
I think I'm about to get to your question. Sorry, but like,
no, go ahead.
I think Illinois is now competitive on the west side of the Big Ten Conference. I actually talked about this with a colleague of mine this afternoon, and he looked me straight in the face. He's like, "Where do you think Illinois ranks?" And we were all, this is when we were basically like, "Boy, I wish they would just announce Altmyer so we can get this over with." Somewhere in like two or three, I actually think in the Big Ten West. I actually like Hudson Card an awful lot. I think Ryan Walters and Graham Harrell got a real, real big get there, especially with what they want to do in the, air raid kind of system that Graham Harrell is going to bring to West Lafayette. So, you know, you may put him at the top maybe. And there's a wild card in Jeff Sims over at Nebraska, where he's never really had the opportunity to really shine at Georgia Tech because they were trying to transition from the Paul Johnson triple option to, you know, a more modern offense that Jeff Collins wanted to do. Yep. Now Jeff Sims gets to go into whatever offense, it's going to be run at Nebraska under Matt Rhule, and we don't know that yet. But I've never been a big fan of whoever they're going to put at quarterback at Nebraska, not because they're not very, very good, because I think Adrian Martinez is really good. I think Casey Thompson's really good. But if you don't put anything around them, then they end up being what they are, which is a non-bowl targets. Team. You're not a non-bowl team and getting your coach fired, right? Yeah, and targets for injury, right? So that's a concern I have. I have no earthly idea what Wisconsin's trying to do with Phil Longo. I don't understand the fit with Luke Fickell. I don't understand the fit late in the year in Madison, Wisconsin. I don't understand the fit with that fan base because.
Well, and I don't know if you heard, but they just landed Tanner Mordecai from SMU.
I did hear that. And it's confusing to me because I'm sorry, but I thought you just got a quarterback out of the portal. So I'm confused. Yeah. I'm confused as to what Phil Longo wants to do. I'm confused as how this fan base is going to feel about this. Cause Mike, you know, I grew up with the saying that if you want to have a country band, you better have a fiddle. Well, guess what? In Madison, Wisconsin, you better run the football. Like, and I don't know how much Phil Longo really wants to do that. And I don't know why, because in late December, guess what? You better be running the football, because trying to throw it in that weather is going to be a real pain in the you-know-what. I have no idea what Wisconsin's trying to do. The top of the chart to me, and this is where I kind of show my bias, I think Iowa got a steal. I love Cade McNamara. I think that there's a reason why Michigan got to the playoff last year with him and was able to win the Ohio State game with him under center. I understand what they did this year because they have a higher profile, bigger arm talent that they have at quarterback, and they got to back to the playoff and they won the Big Ten again this year. I get it. I understand all of it. But with everything that happened with Iowa's offense this year, if you can put a good quarterback around that, you've saw it before with, you know, the quarterbacks that they've had before, you know, their quarterback before everything that happened, you know, with Kirk Ferentz and his son and everything, that quarterback was there for like 8 years, right? And or seemingly it felt like that way. And they had a functioning offense. And so I think that Cade McNamara gives Iowa the opportunity to have a functioning offense. And so from that standpoint, you got to put him at the top of where you're ranking quarterbacks in the Big Ten West. So You know, Tanner Morgan had to save Minnesota's butt today in their bowl game as a backup quarterback because the guy that they wanted to showcase in the bowl game couldn't get it done and got hurt. So yeah. I have no earthly idea what PJ Fleck's going to try to do in 2023, but I think that Illinois, if you circle it back to Champaign, I think Illinois found a competitive option in the division that they're going to play in the Big Ten. And I think that that's probably the best case scenario that you could have hoped for. If a week ago you were looking at Hudson Card committing to, you know, Purdue and, you know, other quarterbacks committing to, you know, Houston and other places where you're like, gee, I think what Illinois accomplished today was that they allowed this transfer portal window to get to January 15th and get to the, where the music stops, and we have a quarterback sitting in a chair, and we're not playing the musical games chair where every, you know, the musical chairs game where the music stops and we don't have a quarterback. And I think that was the biggest fear of Illinois fans, and that fear is no longer existing when Luke Altmaier enrolls for classes on January 17th.
Yeah, I the mystery to me, as I look out, is if I'm Cade McNamara, I want, foolishly or not, I want to be an NFL quarterback.
Sure.
We can all debate that there's only, you know, what, 64 of these guys, the way the NFL is set up now. So the odds of any one quarterback making it are pretty small. I would need a coach who's demonstrated better coaching ability than Brian Ferentz. I'm sorry. I just would. So that one kind of took me by surprise. And to be honest, I almost wondered, you know, again, when you look at Lunny Jr. and Bielema, I almost thought McNamara was a better fit for those two. Not as much for Kirk Ferentz, because he's a magnificent head coach, but just the offensive coordinator / quarterback coach. Looks like Brian Ferentz has been Peter principled, where he's been promoted to his level of incompetence, because he was a great offensive line coach, you know.
He was, and he still is, to be honest.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He can't coach quarterbacks to save his life. So,
but the old job, granted, full disclosure, I looked up his name because I couldn't remember it. But when Nate Stanley was the quarterback at Iowa, they had a competent offense. Mm-hmm. And I used to joke always that Nate Stanley was like Flat Stanley, like during the Christmas season. He was always sitting on the shelf at Iowa because it seemed like he was there for like 8 years, right?
But
when he was there, they were running the same things. Guess what? Even though Brian wasn't technically the offensive coordinator throughout that entire period, they were running the same Iowa offensive concepts, because guess what? His dad still was the head coach, and this is what they run, right?
Yeah.
And when he was doing it, they were competent. They weren't great. They weren't, you know, a high-flying offense. Nobody would confuse Iowa.
I just don't think that puts a player like Cade McNamara in the NFL. I mean, look,
but I do think what it does is that for Iowa, I don't know what it does for Cade McNamara.
Yeah, that's my only point in this thing.
Except for it guarantees him a starting role. I mean, honestly, which he did not have at Michigan.
But he could have got that at Illinois. He could have got that at 12 other
correct
states,
right? I mean, correct. And but what it does for Cade McNamara is it gives him a starting role. What it does for Iowa, for me, and in my impression of Cade McNamara, and maybe I'm overselling the young man, but like I think what it does is it allows you to put somebody who's been in a big time role and had a big time role at a school like Michigan that made it to the CFP, it allows you to kind of put pieces around, you know, Cade McNamara, and you go, okay, now we got something here. The only question I have about Iowa is, can they protect him? And who's he gonna have around him? Not only at wide receiver, but also who's he gonna turn and hand the football to, right? Who's the next great Iowa tight end that's gonna save his bacon on a 3rd and 5, right? But if they can slowly put those pieces together, and the dirty little secret is that Kirk Ferentz has finally figured out that the transfer portal doesn't just have to go out of Iowa City, they can actually come in. Once he's figured that out this offseason, I think that they've been pretty active and aggressive in putting together weapons around Cade McNamara, because I mean, I don't know why it took him this long, but I think he's realized now that Phil Parker on the defensive side and the special teams at Iowa are an elite college football playoff level. Maybe I ought to have a competent offense to maybe get involved in some of that discussion. And if Cade McNamara can even get to like a C+ level of quarterback play that Iowa hasn't had in the last 2 or 3 years, that's a pretty dangerous football team again. And that's the reason why I think you put Cade McNamara near the top, because I think from a talent standpoint and from a situational standpoint, he has the potential to take Iowa, you know, similarly to what Tommy DeVito did for Illinois this year.
Right. No, and like I said, I have no problem with McNamara going to Iowa from Iowa standpoint. From McNamara standpoint, mystifies me. You've got a lot of experience growing up in Wisconsin.
Sure.
Let's say Wisconsin starts out under Fickell and maybe they're not as successful. How long is it going to take for Barry Alvarez to be all over that campus in the ears of the people who have power saying, you know, you made a mistake. I kind of told you not to do. You're running off the reservation. Because he's caused problems like that before when coaches have been hired at Wisconsin.
The difference is that when Barry has caused problems like that and been, I would say, a micromanager of the football program, even when he stepped away, he did have this title called athletic director.
Yep.
He does not have that now. And he has absolutely, according to, in terms of university administration, he has no power anymore.
He doesn't have any power. All
Barry could do now is sit in that little box that they have for him at Camp Randall Stadium and watch Chris McIntosh's work in front of him. And so, in a sense, it's going to be a lot. Barry Alvarez now is going to have to take the Pat Richter role, which he took from Pat Richter, by the way, and basically kind of sit there and enjoy it. And so I don't think that Barry Alvarez is going to be able to micromanage stink this back into, you know, what Wisconsin fans are more used to. What I think is going to have to happen is that, and I could be dead wrong, Phil Longo has run the ball at other places, i.e. Ole Miss. But it's not in his MO to do that. And it's not a perfect fit. Luke Fickell in Madison, Wisconsin was a good fit. Phil Longo and Luke Fickell does not seem like a great fit to me, but if they can make it work, then what you've got is you've got a defensive head coach in Luke Fickell, who's at an elite level, who's made it to the college football playoff at Cincinnati. And I don't know, maybe it's the Nebraska theory. I remember last year when they went out and got Chubba Purdy and then they got Casey Thompson. And, you know, if one of them's good, then we got a starting quarterback, right? And so I think that that's kind of what Wisconsin's kind of trying to do here, is that we're going to take multiple quarterbacks and roll the dice, and one of them's got to be good, right? And that's kind of their plan. Illinois' plan is we're trying to get the best fit for what we do. And I do feel like, you know, again, Barry Lunney and Brett Bielema figured that Luke Altmaier was on their list of guys that just fit what we want to do next year and the year after. And that's why you're seeing this commitment and this quarterback fit from his perspective and the perspective of Illinois.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at, like, Mordecai. There's a highlight of him throwing for a touchdown against Houston to make to put up 63 points, and I think it was his ninth touchdown pass of the game. You know, he's not going to be playing against teams like that. He's going to be playing his Big Ten. He's going to be taking hits, but it's interesting. I just don't know. Like I said, it could go over like the virtual lead balloon, or we could have, you know, between what we think may be coming out of Nebraska coupled with what we know is coming out of Purdue, all of a sudden it could be the pass happy West, you know. I mean, who knows? Maybe Lunny will start running UTSA stuff.
If he does that, then Luke's going to get hurt. And I think that there's been a communication there of, hey, Luke, we love that you can make plays laterally with your feet or even on draws with your feet.
Yeah.
But we are not going to ask you to do, like, be an RPO special, like,
right.
You know, like the UTSA quarterback has been for Jeff Traylor over the last few years, and that came into Champaign and won. What I do think is interesting about this fit is that, and I did talk to again Luke Altmaier's high school coach about this, because I have some experience living in Octavia County, Mississippi, and in Starkville specifically. You know, Starkville High is a mile down the road on Highway 12. I've been there many a time. I don't think Luke's going to have the problem of What I also think that Tommy brought to Champaign was this swagger. Luke doesn't have that as much as Tommy. It would be hard for him to have that.
I was going to say, Tommy is a unique guy.
My point being is that I don't think the culture shock of going from Starkville, Mississippi, or from Oxford, Mississippi, to Champaign, Illinois, is going to be a huge thing for Luke. Culturally, he's done the travel circuit with the Elite 11 stuff. His parents have been, you know, culturally, you know, there's been a lot of, like, his high school coach was like, look, there's been a lot of vacations. They've seen a large part of the country and actually a large part of the world. Luke is a little bit more mature than his age would suggest you would think he would be. So I don't think the culture shock, I think that gets kind of buried under the rug sometimes when we talk about this transfer portal stuff, and people might think it's like a video game and you can just plug and play, you know, Luke Altmyer in Illinois, right? It'll just work.
Right.
But I don't think the culture shock will be as bad for him. And I think that he'll be fine. But I do think that that was a significant piece. When you're talking about Barry Lunny trying to get used to, you know, calling offenses in the Big Ten, right, for the first time in his life, he has admitted that that was a transition for him as an adult, middle-aged man, as a first-time offensive coordinator in the Big Ten. So I think that you've got a Brett Bielema, you've got a Barry Lunny, and you've got a set of offensive coaches here that can make the transition easier for Luke if they need to. But I think part of the fit here was finding a very, very mature young man to be able to find a way to make this fit work. From a culture standpoint, not only just from a football standpoint. And I think that that's going to be important for Luke too.
So final, I guess, question on this is, you know, as we look at other things that are being done around the program, is there any, I'm not asking you for any names or anything, but is there any schedule for potentially a DB coach, potentially linebackers coach to be hired?
Okay, so yes, I believe the DB coach will be announced before the bowl game. Let's just say that.
Okay.
Why do I think that? Because Brett Bielema let it kind of slip that the guy's going to be in the box for the bowl game, whoever that person is, right, as an analyst. So it would make sense that we're doing this podcast at December 29th at 11:23 Eastern Standard Time. So I would think that on December 30th, we'll have an announced DB coach at Illinois. That's my guess. Why they keep it so secretive, your guess is as good as mine. The outside linebacker coach and the running backs coach, I think, is going to take more time. I do think that Brett Bielema, specifically from the outside linebacker coach perspective, I think he's waiting for Black Monday in the NFL. I think the regular season in the NFL has to end. I think there are NFL people he wants to talk to before he fills that position. And I think maybe the same thing goes for running backs coach as well. And I'm not saying that he's specifically looking at NFL, but he could be looking for guys where they're in the CFP or they're analysts in the CFP or their season's not technically over yet. Or he's trying to get to the end of the transfer portal window, which is, I think, January 15th. And he's trying to get to a situation where, or he's trying to get to where everybody's enrolled in classes that week. And so now coaches can start to look to what's my situation for this spring or whatever. Mid-January just seems to be a good kind of marking place for when those last two spots are going to be opening up or going to be closing, I'm sorry, on the Illinois coaching staff. That being outside linebacker and running backs coach. But when Brett Bielema sits there in the press conference in the bowl game and says that they're anticipating that the guy is going to be in the box on January 2nd, my guess is before the end of the weekend, we're going to know who the DB coach is.
Okay. And then as any other final thoughts here, as we kind of wrap up, any other thoughts in terms of what you Luke Altmyer, is there anything we didn't cover or anything else? We hit a lot of ground.
I don't want to call it a dog and pony show, but I'm telling you right now, these coaches are going to try to convince everybody within the 3-county area of Champaign-Urbana that there will be a quarterback competition this spring between Luke Altmyer and Donovan Leary. I am less how do you put it, cynical about that type of a quarterback competition than I was for the Tommy DeVito, Art Sitkowski quarterback competition that they tried to kind of drama up, okay?
Yep.
I do think Donovan Leary is going to be given a chance to run this offense with the ones, especially in the spring. I do think he's going to be given the chance to play better than Luke Altmyer and give them a reason to think that he should be the starting quarterback. The problem here is that Luke Altmyer was, you know, plucked out of the portal for a reason. And when we got done talking about the arranged marriage that was Tommy DeVito and Barry Lunney, well, Donovan Leary was not signed by Barry Lunney, and he was either. And so he's now tried to have Donovan Leary essentially was asked to learn the Tony Peterson offense before he got to Champaign. And then he got to Champaign and he was supposed to learn the Barry Lunney offense. And he's done a real good job of doing both, to be quite honest with you. And I think that they're really, really happy with the progression that Donovan Leary's that had as a, you know, as a, in his first year as a freshman at Illinois, and he'll be going into his redshirt freshman year in 2023 this spring. This is why I think he'll be given the opportunity to make that a competition in the spring. And they may even bleed it into preseason camp in August. But I do think that if you had to have a betting favorite right now, it would be Luke Altmyer. But I do think Donovan Leary is going to make this a much more of a competition from my cynical mind than it was this past, let's say, preseason camp in August last year when they tried to drama it up for a few weeks between Tommy DeVito and Art Sitkowski. So I do think that that's going to be on the table for the spring. You're going to hear it, and I think it's potentially on the table for you to hear all the way up until August.
Okay, perfect. Well, I tell you what, Matt, I know you're down in Tampa, and you're getting, obviously, your coverage here for the Illini guys. So, folks, we would tell you to keep your eyes peeled because Matt writes a lot of stories, and he's got a lot of time on his hands as he's following around the team trying to figure out what is interesting and what do people want to know about as he gets put on all these little press activities, for lack of a better thing. And of course, if you go to IlliniGuys.com, Matt's stories are there. You want to follow and get a subscription so you can read every word. We don't want to put a number on it, but there'll be quite a few leading up to the game, and then obviously analysis of the game. And of course, as soon as we're done with that, the transfer portal's still there. So, and we do expect across the country after the bowl season, another wave of players to go into the portal. So where it stops, no one knows. Matt, thanks so much for coming on. We really appreciate you. And now we're going to take a look. We're looking here towards Brad and Ked to talk about the basketball coverage for tonight. So we'd also like to tell you that if you are looking at Illini coverage, IlliniGuys.com is what powers Eye on the Illini. And you can get that subscription for $99 a year. We have not raised our prices since we started. We've resisted inflation. At the same time, it does cost money to send Matt and Brad out across the country. As you can imagine, the airlines and hotels have raised their prices. So have the auto rental companies and the gas that goes in them. And obviously restaurant costs as well. So, it does cost some money for us to give you great coverage, and we would appreciate every subscription. And if you have friends, please send them our way. We would love to have them come on to IlliniGuys.com as subscribers as well. We also have our other podcast, Ked's Recruiting Roundup, which is Ked's gives you the idea of what it's like from the athlete, from the family of the athlete, and the coaches of the athlete, of what it's like to be recruited for a Power Five school like Illinois. And then Sturdy for 30, which is Brad Sturdy's podcast that will have a variety of guests. And it's usually a lot of fun. And with his contacts over 20 plus years of doing this, you just never know who's going to be there. So that's a lot of fun as well. And of course, we have our radio show, the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular. That's a 2-hour weekly show. you go to IlliniGuys.com, hit the radio button, and click on that, and it will take you to it'll take you to our list of stations. Find the station closest to you. It'll tell you what day will be on, either Friday or Saturday, and what time. It's a 2-hour show. You can tune in, and the only thing we ask you to do is go ahead and please call up or email the radio station. And thanks for having them, you know, thank them for having us on. That really helps out. And of course, anytime you're listening to a podcast, if you can give us a 5-star review, if you feel like we've earned it, that would be fantastic. It helps us in the world of podcasting. So with that, we are going to turn to Brad and Ked, and we will talk to them about the Illini victory over Bethune-Cookman. So as promised, Brad Sturdy and Kedrick Prince are here after the Illini defeat of Bethune-Cookman, 85-52. There was a lot of angst in Illini Nation after the Missouri loss, Brad. There was a lot of calls for tweaks. What did you see that jumped out to you as a former coach and somebody who's covered the team for decades that they are doing differently?
Well, I think there were three things that kind of stand out. One, they didn't switch on defensively. Brad told us after the game that it was about the fouling. They've been really good, actually, in 5-on-5s. If you look at it, it's been transition and turnovers, things that have hurt them defensively, but really good in 5-on-5s, but they're fouling too much. And he said that was the big Achilles heel with the switching. So they aren't going to switch as much. You know, sometimes you're going to get caught on a switch. It's going to happen, but it's going to have to be a communication thing. It takes away some of the actions that they're going to run if you're not just switching. And I think they got a little lazy switching, and it wasn't like they didn't fight through. Now they're showing some toughness, fighting through screens, things like that. That was one. Second thing, offensively, they ran a lot more spread actions, and they ran some very simple spread actions. You know, we always think spreads just throw into the wing, but there's so many more new. It's so nuanced, and there's so many little things. It's reads and cuts and the high post entry, the pinch post, handoff, the pinch post ball screen, all these things happen out of it. But it got people moving. It gets the ball moving. I thought in the first half there was a lot more ball movement. So that was, instead of running a 5-out where guys are just reading and playing, now with the spread, they kind of have certain cuts they're going to make. And you saw them get some good looks out of that. And then, I guess the third thing was no press. They didn't apply any pressure. It was more of a pack line style defense. Instead of a full court pressure or overplays, and you can see that although the press can be effective at times, and I think you will see them use that going forward. I think they're going to play some 5-out still going forward. I think they're going to still switch some screens and situational going forward. But overall, now you got more things that they have to prepare for, and you can see. I think this is the better. This system right now, with this group, especially if you're going to play Dane at the 5, which I think is the best group offensively, having that low post presence. If you're going to play him at the 5, then it makes sense to play the defense where you're not switching everything. So, yeah, I think that those were the main three tweaks from an X and O standpoint.
Ed, what did you see that was different, and particularly what did you see that you liked that was different?
Well, tonight was exactly what the doctor – of the University of Illinois ordered, and they responded. It's a cupcake, but it's a cupcake dessert that I would love to take because I see the Michigan and Central Michigan game. So, you take the win. I liked what I saw tonight. Tonight was the first time. Let me slow down. I have so many thoughts in my mind right now. I liked what I saw tonight with the offense. I love the pinch post because he hasn't ran that a lot since his first year there or first couple of years there. But I saw different, reading reactions, motion signs off of it. I thought that was great. It gave guys more principles, like what Brad just mentioned. Haven't seen that in a long, long time. I said it, and I don't know all the details, and we're not going to know. I'm a guy where I think you send a message to a kid, and I know Sky Clark was hurt. Send a message to kids. If kids aren't going to play, the best thing to do is to give them some playing time. And I like seeing that because the kids, they have to perform. And the one thing I want all the fans to know, for all those people out there tweeting it, you know, Brad and I asking, do they work on this? Does he make any adjustments? Well, you saw it tonight. You know, they didn't switch as much. You saw different variations. I did, and I've been very critical about out-of-bounds plays. I saw different out-of-bounds plays where they tried to get looks off of it. Those were all unique things that I saw. And when I was, you know, lost for words a few minutes ago, the part I don't want to see stop, I want to continue to see them press. They're good enough to press still. Dane Danger is not fast, but he's quick, and he's quick enough to cover in the back. I really want to see them utilize Coleman and they utilize Terrence Shannon Jr. and Sincere Harris. I was glad to see Sincere respond. I thought that was just huge. And everybody in the country, it doesn't matter whether it's national, local, everybody knew that this kid deserved more minutes, and he responded to it.
So now let's go the converse thing, Brad. Was there any stuff that you would have liked to have seen change, or anything that was a problem that you saw rear its head again tonight?
Well, I think there were two things. I mean, they thought that they were going to be a little better rebounding because they weren't switching all the time, creating mismatches, and they gave up a bunch of offensive rebounds the first half. I think that was concerning. And then, of course, the turnovers. I mean, 15 turnovers is too many. They make a lot of silly plays. I think they threw away three outlet passes. Threw away three outlet passes. Like, and it looked like, I don't know, it looked like a quarterback that was colorblind throwing those passes. I mean, like, we hit guys in the chest from Bethune-Cookman. So there was a lot of – I think those were the two things. They have to clean up the turnovers. Now, I will say this. And for all of the, you know, faults, I know a lot of criticism of Sky Clark, but they only played without a point guard tonight. I mean, they didn't have a guy really that ran the point. I mean, you know, Epps went in a little bit. Sincere is, you know, that's not really his thing. He did some good things. He was great defensively. I thought he was really good offensively too. But he's not really a guy who's just going to, you know, distribute or get control things. You know what I mean? He wants to play 1,000 miles an hour.
And they he does.
You know, and that's okay. I mean, that's great. Yep. That's his thing. But, you know, I think that Sky can bring some steadiness to that point guard position. And so hopefully that will, you know, when he gets back healthy, and I'm told it's precautionary. I was talking to the assistant coach beforehand for the game while they were going to shoot around. And, you know, it's precautionary. He tried to go and just didn't feel right with his left shoulder. It's his left shoulder, so that's positive, you know, going forward. But I would expect him to play against Northwestern next week. So, you know, unless something pops up on, you know, on a test or an MRI or something. So, you know, so yeah, I think that getting him back will help. And also, you know, extended minutes for Danger and Harris, they get a little tired and they do some things that maybe they wouldn't normally do. And so, yeah, I think those were probably the concerns for me.
Ked, any concerns on your end of the viewing?
I guess I only have one. And right now, I really – well, one and a half. I really want to see Ty Rogers succeed, and that's not really a concern. But this kid is at Illinois for all the right reasons, and I want him to find his role and his niche. Every person on that team, every player, I believe personally – they know what their roles are, you know, they know what their role is. And he tries so hard. It's like, it's tough to not pull for a guy like that because you want to see him do well. The other half is I want to see the ball go in the basket a lot more for Coleman Hawkins. A lot of people didn't like those come down the courts, you know, open look. I do, because how many times have we seen him pump fake and not shoot it?
I agree.
Who cares if he missed? Who cares if he missed a three? It doesn't matter. What's the difference of him missing a three and you pass the ball once and Matthew Myers shoots a three or Terrence Shannon? He needs that confidence. That and be honest with you, if you have rebounders, this is old school basketball. I don't really like it, but if there's rebounders down there, there's nothing wrong with that. They need to get him going. I will still say this, and Mike, you and I talked about this off the air. I will still say, personally, his offensive abilities is going to be the key to this whole season because everyone else has slowly started to figure out what their niche is on this team.
Okay, and here's mine, and I'll let Brad take the first shot at me. There were two two things that concerned me tonight, and they're interlocked. First one is, is I'm getting a little scared that the team isn't as good a shooting team as we thought it was going to be, as they shot 28.6%, 8 for 28 from the three-point line against a admittedly overmatched opponent. And then conversely, the rest of the team was 6 for 14. Matt Meyer had a little bit of rough night, 1 for 6. I don't worry about that. But RJ Melendez was 1 for 8, and that's all he shot. And to me, he's, with his athleticism, he has to be more active than just standing around a three-point line and throwing up shots.
Yeah, I actually – I don't disagree with you, Mike. The one thing I'll say about RJ was that – so they get the ball late shot clock one time. They throw an inbounds play to him. He drives, he spins, he gets the foul. It's like, that's it. That's the guy.
That's the guy, exactly. Yep.
Wanting to see. And then that was the only time he took a shot inside the arc.
Yep.
He's 1 for 8. And I know they ran some actions for him. They're trying to get confidence for him. He struggled. Brad actually talked in the post game about Brad Underwood, that is, the other Brad. He talked about in the post game that RJ's confidence, he had the two best days of practice he's had all year. Said he made everything and shoot around. He made everything yesterday in practice. And then he couldn't throw it in the ocean tonight in the game. You know, he's 1 of 8 from three. So, but you, as you start making them in practice, you'll start making in the game. And that's just the way it works with shooters. And he's just struggling with his confidence right now. So I would like to see him maybe, you know, shot fake and put it on the floor and pull up jump shot. Take the 17-footer, 15-footer, and then make one of those. And then you take the next three or get an easy basket. You know, I think those are things that he has to do. I totally agree with you. I think that's a key going forward. And then if you talk about shooting, like, I don't really worry about Matthew Meyer. I don't necessarily worry about some of the other guys, Epps and things like that. I am worried about RJ's consistency with the shot. I'm worried about Coleman's shooting. I really think that they need that other guy who can space the floor. And I think that might be
Luke.
And so talk to Luke pregame, and mid-January was what he said. So a couple weeks away. And I don't think he is going to – you know, he comes back, he's not going to be the Luke Goody that was before the season. But, man, this dude, I was watching him even warm-ups. He's out there shooting jump shots, and he just drains everyone. I mean, the dude can just shoot the basketball. And he knows how to play, and he'll bring some leadership, toughness to the court as well. So, yeah, I think getting him back is going to be huge, and finding a way, you know, going forward maybe helps that shooting.
Ted, any thoughts on the overall team shooting?
Well, I'm not as concerned as either one of you two. It's not a concern for me. The one thing I mentioned before, and I'll say that Brad mentioned it too, they need that other guy, and I think that should be Coleman. I'm not worried because it happens. Because there's nights when you look at their, you know, you go back and look at some of their previous games, even in some of the, you know, in some of their four losses, they didn't shoot the ball terrible from the three-point line. It's just – shooting is shooting. And Matthew Meyer, up until tonight, he had been on a roll. So you're going to have games like that. I just think tonight, me personally, I'm going to chalk up RJ Melendez as just a tough shooting night, because he had been pretty consistent too up until the Missouri game and tonight, obviously. But that's going to happen when all you do is shoot the basketball. On the flip side, you know, me as a coach, if I would tell one of my players, hey, you're struggling, I'm not going to tell you not to shoot the ball, but I'm going to tell you to get to the rim.
Yep.
See the ball go through the rim. You know, if you're a free throw shooter, draw something up for that person to get some confidence. And if you remember last year, we knew how good RJ was last year, and I remember Underwood did that a couple times. I don't panic because of one game. I mean, like the Missouri game, everybody panicked. I didn't, because you saw what Missouri did to Kentucky. Obviously, they're pretty good. You can't do that. Every time you lose, you can't panic and you can't throw in the towel. But I will give Brad Underwood credit. Changing things that has cost him games is not panicking. That's just being a good coach and noticing a trend that he wanted to fix.
Yeah, and I do think that Underwood's a master at tweaking, particularly around the midseason, you know, as he did at Oklahoma State. And that makes a big deal, you know, how they change up. So, Brad, I'm going to go a little bit more global here on the next question. How does Michigan losing to Central Michigan at home affect your opinion of that team? And then it lets you guys answer that and start with Brad. And then I'll have a second question for you about the Big Ten before we talk about Illinois and its future.
So, well, I think it's been shocking, some of these upsets. And I'll even give you this one. So, you know, everybody's talking about how bad Bethune-Cookman is. But Bethune-Cookman beat Chicago State by more than Minnesota did. So there you go. You can use that transitive property and say Bethune-Cookman is a Big Ten level school, right? So we can
exactly.
These things. But, you know, you look at EIU beating Iowa. You look at Michigan losing Central Michigan. And hopefully people will start to appreciate a team that has not lost any bad – doesn't have any bad losses. You know, and even today, I think – who was it? Alabama A&M. You know, gave Ohio State fits for a half, right?
Yes.
And that was the same. It was very similar to the Illinois game where they end up losing by 30 or 20 or whatever. But it's still, you know, it was dicey for a while. And the when you have old teams on the other sideline or teams that don't have anything, and you've got teams of new guys who don't understand and they're young, you know, like Illinois, like Ohio State, Michigan's relying on some young guys too, and they've lost their point guard. This is what's going to happen. You're going to see parity in college basketball even more with the transfer portal because teams are new every year. When a team brings back everybody, that's a team that's probably going to be pretty good. When a team loses everybody, it's going to take him a while to figure it out. Like I've always said, like Matt Painter is a master of bringing back guys and somehow keeping them until they get old. And they bring all these guys back, and they start the season, and they're, like, loaded. You know, last few years, think about them early in the year. They've got all these key wins. But as other teams develop and get their guys there, Purdue isn't the best team by the end of the year because other teams gel, and they're more gelled in November. And that's been kind of my take on it. And I think we're going to see that more and more. Old teams are going to beat young teams, even if the old team doesn't have as much talent as the young team. And I think you're seeing that with Missouri. Although they got new guys, they're old. Their new guys are old. They don't have a bunch of freshmen playing. And Kobe Brown right now looks like Kobe Bryant. So, I mean, yeah, I think that's my ramble on that topic.
So Ked, I know that your heart goes out to Juwan Howard. what did you think about that Michigan loss? Because I was just astounded that they put themselves in that position.
Well, I'm going to tell you guys right now, Michigan is in trouble. And I'm not saying that because there's no love lost for me with Michigan, but I'm going to tell you, they don't have a lot of great wins. And I agree with Brad. This is why I'm not panicking. Illinois has done well in the non-conference schedule. I mean, let's be honest. Call a spade a spade. When we went into the non-conference, nobody predicted Illinois to go 12-0 or 11-2, whatever. We all predicted 3 or 4 losses. Now, we didn't see the Missouri loss coming. But Illinois does have some good quality wins, and guess what? They're going to get some during this Big Ten season. Michigan, the reason I say they're in trouble is because the Big Ten, I mean, I'm asking you guys. I saw what Nebraska did to Iowa. I saw, regardless of kids, players were injured or not, Northwestern go to Michigan State and win. They're no easy games. There's usually, like Nebraska, you could kind of count on that. That's not happening anymore. So Michigan, the reason that's why I'm saying that they're in trouble because you're not going to go to Nebraska and just blow them out unless you're having an amazing night now. So I think it's a bad loss for Michigan. It's a bad loss for the conference, you know, in general, because if they don't get into the tournament, you're going to hear people start to complain and they're going to start making comments about what happened with Juwan, what he did last year and all his, you know, antics on the court. Is he the right guy? And I know he's frustrated, but Brad is right. They're young, and they do have talent to turn this around. They have, an NCAA tournament-made roster. Whether they get there or not remains to be seen, but that's not a good win, no matter how you look at it, because it was at home.
Yeah.
Hey, and by the way, Mike, you got to shout out to former Illini commit Reggie Bass with 16 points for Central Michigan against the Wolverines. So he's still – taking down the Wolverines, you know, just like he's an Illini. There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
You know, that is, you know, it's just amazing how some of these things work out. And Juwan had to love it. So the next thing is, You know, Iowa losing to Nebraska. Nebraska's had almost pulled off other upsets there. What do you think of does that portend to the Big Ten having a ton of, you know, I mean, is this going to be like a league that's between 13 and 7 and 7 and 13 with a bunch of teams, you know, wedged there in the middle, and maybe only potentially Purdue because Zach Edey is such a unique weapon, you know, that maybe has the chance to break away? Or what do you see now, Brad, now that you know, we're almost nearing January 1st, any thoughts on what you anticipate for the Big Ten?
Yeah, I mean, I look at Purdue's schedule. I like their schedule for them. I mean, it plays out well. You know, and I thought before the season that end of the season game where Illinois travels to Purdue might be the game to maybe get a Big Ten title share for one of them or whatever. But I feel like Purdue is going to – I'm not saying they're going to run the table, but I think they have a favorable schedule. I like the way they're playing. They're finding a way to win some of these games that other teams are not. But I agree with you, Mike. I think that after that, I mean, I think Illinois could be 10-10. I think Illinois could be 14-6 or 15-5 too. I really do. If it clicks, I think Indiana's in the same boat. I could see them at 11-9 or 14-6. I mean, if they put it together, I think the same can be said for Wisconsin. I think you can say the same thing about Maryland. And I'll be honest with you, another team that's really pretty good is Penn State. I mean, there's a lot of average to or slightly above average teams in the Big Ten. I don't know that they have a team. I do think, and I will say this, and this is my homerism maybe, I think Illinois is the one team in the Big Ten that has the upside and potential to make a, you know, maybe Purdue Purdue, I think Illinois is the other team in the Big Ten that has the upside and potential to make a deep NCAA tournament run. I'll be honest with you, if they get in the tournament, I mean, you know, you probably don't want to see them as 7 seed. They remind me a lot of the team Underwood 3 years ago that made the run at the end, ended up they were probably going to be a 7 seed in the tournament. They were going ahead in the Big Ten tournament before COVID hit. And that team might be like this team in the sense that they get hot at the end. And they're, you know, you're a 6 seed, you're a 3 seed, and you see them as your 6, you're like, holy crap, this team's loaded. Of course, same token, if Michigan's the 11 seed, you probably don't want to see them if you're the 6 seed, right, in the first round, because there is a lot of upside on that team too. So I think the Big Ten has a lot of teams that can pull upsets. I'm just not sure they have a bunch of teams that can make deep runs.
Good.
I see Purdue winning it because they have the biggest basketball player to ever play the game. Sarcasm. there's just no answer for him. But I will say this, and you know, it's wonder, you know, no wonder Brad and I are friends. We agreed a lot on things. I just think, and it's not being a homer, Brad, Illinois has proven that they could be some of the best teams in the country. This is why, you know, I think Illinois will do well in the tournament if they get in. Now, Mike, to answer your question, there's going to be a lot of teams with some losses. And I think what's going to happen, you're going to hear a lot of the naysayers start complaining. Well, look at, you know, let's say Indiana, you know, if they're 11-9 or whatever the case may be, and, you know, what kind of seed do they get, or should they get in the tournament? Well, Indiana played a pretty, you know, tough schedule as well. So it's tough to say what the outcome is going to be, but I think everybody's going to beat up on everybody other than Purdue. There's going to be a lot of teams. I think the second and third place team, because here's really the question, second, third, fourth place team, those teams potentially could have 7, 6, 7, 8, 9 losses. I really believe that. Because if Purdue didn't have, you know, Shaq Jr., it'd be different.
Yeah.
This would be different for them too. And the schedule does make a difference. It's not about being a homer. That's why I think Illinois – and I think Michigan has the best team on paper when you look at how the tournament's been ran and how teams have done to do well in the tournament. I think Illinois is going to get in, but I don't think Michigan has a shot if they don't turn things around here. And again, who are they going to be to do that?
Well, and who's going to get slapped if they don't? That's the question. So, Brad, you got a game up against Northwestern coming. I know you haven't had a ton of time to dive into them yet. Any just thoughts that Illini fans, things they should should be looking for coming, you know, next Wednesday night at 8 p.m. on BTN?
Well, Northwestern's got some old guys too. Boo Booey and Chase Audige are going to be the guys who shoot the ball for them. Robbie Barron as well. They've got a lot of old guys, but they are not deep at all. Like they don't have much depth. You know, just talking tonight to some of the coaches, we were talking about that game, and you know, Chester said, you know, we got to use our depth. We got to wear them down. We got to put pressure on them. We got to guard them and make it hard for them to get, you know, clean looks, and then just wear them down throughout the game. They don't have a lot of depth. So if you got guys like Terrence Shannon getting to the rim and drawing fouls, and Dane Danger drawing fouls, even if he shoots 50% from the line, it takes away their best players won't be on the floor then. And we know that Boo Booey and Chase Audige are guys that can get hot at certain situations and really light it up. And if they do, then it's going to be really tough. But that's why you have guys. That's why you're counting on a guy like Sincere Harris to be your defensive stopper. Terrence Shannon's a fantastic defender against in one-on-one. So I think that's the key, is going to be able to do this stuff, like to be able to, you know, to guard them, to handle that. I don't think the atmosphere is going to be crazy. I mean, there'll be nice crowd. There'll be a lot of orange there as well, as usual. But I do think they have to be able to play defense and wear them down, and that will be the key to them winning that game.
Kid?
Well, my thing is, I don't know if people realize this, but Northwestern is one of the top five defensive teams in college basketball this year. That's my concern, number one. And we've seen how Illinois, when things go bad, you know, and new teams put pressure on you, and then they're not able to convert. That was my thing. And I think going into the game, I think Northwestern is thinking that, hey, you know, this is an Illinois team that's been beaten. It's ripe. It's a home game for them. And I don't know if it's going to be easy for Illinois. I just think because it's that rivalry, even though, you know, it's Northwestern basketball, and I don't mean to be disrespectful to any Northwestern fans who are listening to this, but it's a game that I've been talking about a few times on the same podcast. This is a trap game for me because think about this. They're already 0-2 in the Big Ten. If they start the season 0-3 in the Big Ten, I think that's a tough look, and then who knows what's going to happen. It's a big game. You know, I don't want to minimize it. This game is huge. They have to get off the snide. They need this win. And it stinks that they put themselves in a situation. Now we're going to see what kind of character they have and if they're going to go out to defend. And then, like Brad mentioned, I think Dan Danger is the key for a lot of teams because, you know, it stinks that he can't shoot free throws because he's so good around the basket. And he's so thick and long, and I don't think Northwestern will have an answer for him. But they can't go up there and be the worst free throw shooting team in the Big Ten like they are. Those are things that win games, guys. You can't, you know, turn the ball 15 times, and you can't, you know, be the worst free throw shooting team in the Big Ten like you are and expect to win road games.
And a final question for you, Brad, before I let, you know, the two of you kind of wrap up a little bit. The Illini's pace, when they pick up a pace, I mean, they will have some occasional turnovers, but it seems like they don't have as many lackadaisical turnovers when they pick up the pace and they start running a little bit. Will we see, you know, coach try to unleash them at least at times in the Big Ten where they get up and down the court? Dane Danger had a couple of great opportunities simply because he hustled up and down the court, got a dunk attempt, got a layup attempt, got a, you know, some shots at the free throw line just because he hustled in transition.
Well, I think that was the plan. I mean, tonight, yeah, I probably can't hear it from home, but I'm telling you, Brad Underwood's yelling, go, run, over and over and over, because he wants them to push the tempo. He wants to put the pressure on the defense getting down the floor. But at the same time, it does lead to some turnovers. I feel like they are a team that, you know, and then they try and run a spread, and it's kind of little – they have to think a little bit right now. That it'll become more natural over the next week that they're doing this. But, yeah, I think they want to get up and push tempo. The problem is in the Big Ten, as we all know, the Big Ten is going to become a possession game at some point. I mean, you're going to play these games. You can run and you can try. I'm going to push the tempo. I'm going to do this. You know, and even teams that want to play fast. You know, Iowa loves to play fast. Illinois loves to play fast. It becomes a possession game at the end, you know, down the stretch, because teams, you have to make good decisions at that point. And that's where you have to be able to execute in the half court. And, you know, Illinois and Northwestern are two of the best teams at executing in half court defense in the conference and in the country. Now, the difference is Northwestern's going to run two or three guys back on every shot attempt because they're worried about transition. And that they're playing a little bit like Wisconsin right now. We're going to cut out transition. So now you're going to see, you know, it's going to be hard for Illinois to get that transition unless it's off of a turnover. But especially off of a, you know, even off an offensive or defensive rebound. So it's going to be a possession game, and they're going to try and push as much as they can. But at the end of the day, you got to execute in the half court if you want to win in this conference.
Kid.
Well, you know, going back to, you know, things that we've kind of talked about a little bit, I guess, you know, my thing is, you know, Matt, you know, again, I'm not just saying this just because I'm on this podcast with Brad here. You know, they have to do little things, guys. They just do. And I don't want to minimize it again. Like I said earlier, they have to try to figure those things out. And also, you know, I don't want to take away, I know, you know, what your question is, but I don't want to take away from the fact that, you know, being an older team, you know, and being more physical, you know, could come into play. And I'm really curious to see next week what that lineup is going to look like.
Cool. All right. So I'm going to reverse the order now. Let Ked go first, and Brad will wrap up. But Ked, give us your final thoughts on a pretty a workmanlike but satisfying victory over Bethune-Cookman.
Like I said when we started the podcast, you know, it was holiday feasting, and it was good. It's good cupcake and it's good sweets and desserts. You needed this game to show that you're trying to work on some things differently. But it's game time now. And, I mean, you're really – now we're going to see what they're made of. You're going to see how tough they are. Again, you can't go 0-3 in the conference and expect to compete for a conference title. So it's an easy win. Illinois was expected to win. The turnovers, when you run, that's going to happen. I don't want to see 20 a game. If they can keep them under 15, I'm okay with that. And, starting out, you know, a team like tonight, I think they were working on things, and I think that's going to happen. And if you want a team to run, as a coach, you got to expect they're going to have some turnovers. It's just the ones that are unnecessary and the illegal screens and throwing the ball up in the stands. Those are things that you can't have.
Brad, your final thoughts here?
Yeah, I think Brad Underwood summed it up well in his post-game press conference when he said, you know, I asked him a question. I said, are you where you want to be? And are you happy with where you're at, you know, after the non-conference schedule's over? And he said he was. He said, you know, last year, you know, we were ranked highly, but our best non-conference win was probably Missouri. And as he said, they were not very good. They fired their coach. Or Kansas State was also not very good, and they fired their coach. So he said, we didn't have the wins that we had this year. And I really believe that he's right. He said, you know, our resume is pretty good when you consider you have, you know, you don't have any bad losses. Your losses are to your at Maryland loss, your Missouri loss, who turns out they're 13-1. They might be okay. Your loss to top 10 team in Virginia. And, you know, your wins over Texas and UCLA. I mean, you know, the home loss Penn State is, you know, puzzling. They had a bad day, but overall, I mean, it's pretty good resume, and he likes where they're at. And I think sometimes we get too caught up in, you know, and he mentioned this too. He said he's playing a long game. It's not about this game or that game. Obviously, you want to, you know, want to win every game, but the whole point is at the end of the year, you're the best team you can be, and you're ready to play in the NCAA tournament. And that's what Illinois has to do. And I think that's what they can do with this group.
Perfect. Well, I tell you what, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on and talking about the victory and a little bit of Big Ten basketball in between. Of course, earlier we had Matt Stevens, who was talking to us about Luke Altmaier coming on to quarterback the Illini, which was a huge commitment to get a four-star level player to come and play at the University of Illinois, especially when many teams in the Big Ten West, as we talked, Purdue, Wisconsin, Nebraska, Iowa, are all bringing in quarterbacks. It's like a arms race, and this Big Ten West is going to be harder to win next year than it was this year, and the Illini look to be placed very well. And, of course, we thank Brad Sturdy and Kedrick Prince for jumping on as well. This is Illini guy Mike Kegley, and, of course, we will be back right after the bowl game on Monday to talk about, hopefully, what is an Illini victory in the ReliaQuest Bowl in Tampa. And, of course, stay tuned to IlliniGuys.com, where you'll be able to get Ked, Matt, Brad, myself, our stories as we lead up to the game.
Hey,
both
in, Mike, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Back on December 19th, do you remember who was it that said that Altmyer was going to be our quarterback? Do you remember who that was?
I think it was Ked and I.
It was. Thank you, Brad. Thank you for the late Christmas gift. Thank you.
I don't think that was it, Mike Kegley. Well, you know, want to throw that out there,
Brad. I'm older than you, so you know it maybe my memory's hazy.
I think it's hazy. You've been. I don't know what you've been doing, Mike.
Yeah, but exactly.
You got a fog in there. So
yeah.
I'm really excited about Luke Altmyer. So I just want to throw that out there. I thought he was the guy back after his visit, and I feel really good about his talent. Got a lot of arm talent, and he's got a chance to be pretty good. Next year for Illinois.
And I think Illinois would be in a little bit of trouble when you see, McNamara going to Iowa, Mordecai going to Wisconsin, Card going to, going to Purdue, and I think Sims going to Nebraska. I mean, there is a lot of talent that's coming into the Big Ten West next year. And I don't think Illinois, I don't think it would have been a great situation to put an untested and young quarterback behind the wheel. You know, you got to get a guy who's got a little bit more, a little higher talent, and also a guy who has, been around a little bit. Now, some of these guys haven't had as much game action overall, or they've been beaten out somewhere, but I think you're looking at several quarterbacks who've got some talent that will really make it harder on defensive coordinators in 2023.
I agree.
So, yeah. And so perfect, folks. So we'll be back though on January 2nd. If there's something that happens between now and then, big breaking news, of course we will be there. And I guess there's one question, Brad, I'm going to let you wrap up on one final thing. Was there ever any chance that Zach Perrin was going to get into tonight's game? Or was that just one of those things that fans were hoping for it, but realistically that just wasn't in the cards?
Actually, I asked Brad about that in the post game, and he said, he's practiced four times. He said 4 days of practice. And he really just does. He's picked up the spread pretty well, but he doesn't know any of the defensive concepts. And he just didn't feel comfortable putting him in this game, and because he just didn't want him to look lost or lose, and when you don't really know what's going on. And so he's still going to get, they're going to practice the next 4 days. He's going to get 4 days of practice, 5 days of practice for the next game. And I think he's going to get better and better. He's still got a ways to go, I think, from a physical standpoint. But like Brad said, he's a very talented kid. He's very skilled. He's really smart. But it's a different, it's trouble enough coming from France to learn the language here. Now you got to learn all the terminologies too. And that is, it's tough. And so he's really working hard to do that. And, like Brad said after the game, there's a chance he may play next week. It could be next month. It could be next year, he said, but he's, we'll just have to see how he progresses, now he develops.
Perfect, perfect. So with that, we will leave you with our traditional Go Illini, as we are looking forward to an opportunity to win a bowl game for the first time since 1990. Thank you very much, and we will talk to you on Monday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.